Blog Talk Radio.
Company with Gray Eye Smith and Daniel DeShino. Tonight's show is brought to you by a group on allpoetry.com called Late Night Poets, and we have anthologies available on Amazon under the same moniker, so feel free to check those out. I'm going to bring my co-host on, Mr. Daniel Deschino. Hello, Daniel. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Gray. What's happening, my friend?
Not a lot. How are you?
Good, good. Had a really fun day today with my family. So we went to a local Comic-Con, and I got to talk to some interesting people. Yeah, it was fun. Talked to a couple of celebrities and here and there, and bought things I didn't need, but it was fun.
Cool.
Excellent.
Awesome. Yeah, it's Canada Day here in Canada. So I'd like to say
that's
happy
true.
Canada Day to Canadians out there. And,
yeah,
we have a call.
That's true. Oh, we do? Cool.
Oh, so. I'm going to bring on a call.
No, just, okay, great.
Area code 778, who's calling, please?
Hi, this is Afasiana.
Hi, Afasiana. How are you?
Hi.
Hey, Fazy.
Pretty good. Good to be here.
What is happening? Cool. My
great
co-host together. Look at this. My whole family's here all together. That makes me so happy.
What a
beautiful family. My AP family is all my co-hosts here. That's very,
awesome.
Very cool.
All right, well,
go ahead, Grace. Sorry, Bill.
Today's show is based on a couple of contests that Daniel ran for the show, and a couple of leftovers from the last week's show, plus some poetry, so hopefully we'll have time to get through it all. And mine was from your favorite springtime poem, and then Daniel's is from a photo prompt called Castle Among the Trees, which is also the name of the song that was opened for the show, and also prompt Magical Places. So that's tonight's show, as well as some open poetry.
Yeah.
All right, Daniel.
We'll get started here. Yeah, I'm going to post one here now, and I want to make pose a theory to people before we get started, though. So I tend to sometimes interrupt people when they're talking, and I see it happening, and I think I figured out why. I think it's physics. I think because we're all so far away, and I literally think it, like, takes, like, the speed of light, I literally think it takes a while for everything. Like, I'm hearing people, like, 1 second before I hear them. I don't know if you guys noticed that. I was thinking about that today. I don't mean to interrupt people, I swear, but sometimes I just hear that. So I'm wondering if it's because we are so all far away from each other. It just takes, like, a split second for the voices to get there, which is actually kind of cool, I think. So anyway, that's my theory as a complete layman and not a scientist at all of what happened. Anybody?
That's not a problem, Daniel.
I don't know, just something I was thinking about. So anyway, we are in summer. Bill says it's pretty sticky over there. So yeah, it's actually pretty hot here. I have like 3 days in Massachusetts here of thunderstorms coming up, and it's like 150% humidity or something today. So it's pretty hot. With that said, we're gonna get into the summer poems from last week, and of course, ladies first. So, Faziana, if you want to read this one, that would be great.
Okay. Memories of a Georgia Summer by Blues Man. Hills become mountains 1,000 feet from ground. In the southern state of Georgia, there are many of these around. 1 foot less is just a hill. My eyes would never know. The view is still so breathtaking, the majestic way things grow. On the summit of these mountains, when summer sun is high, you can almost reach out to touch puffy clouds as they pass by. Stunted chestnut oaks abound, loose boulders in between, lichen-covered rocks and trees, enchanting and serene. Down in the valley of lobelobly pines stands old-growth turkey oak, muscadine grapes wild on the vine, a harvest for common folk. Bed sheets white on forest floor, long poles shake the vine. The sweetest of God's raindrops fall to make a very tasty wine. Catfish in the pan at night jump from Coldstream Lake. Swimming holes and bamboo poles and mama's cornbread cake. Fresh-cut country grass in rows, the stuff in bales of hay, line the edge of every field along each lazy country way. A simple and contented life, childhood memories of bliss, summer days of my youth, I will always dearly miss. And Paul.
Well, beautiful read. Feliciano, and I really enjoyed the rhythm and flow of that. You know, it had a lyrical quality to it. You know, the rhyming was spot on, and it sounded beautiful. You know, it paints such a serene picture of this Georgian summer, and you know, all that it entails with the taking of the grapes to the white seat on the forest floor to make the wine, which is just a beautiful thing. So excellent write and fabulous read. What are your thoughts, Daniel? Hello, Daniel.
Sorry, I'm either coughing and interrupting people, or I'm muting when I shouldn't be. So, one day I'm gonna get it right. The author's notes said this poem, excuse me, is about a real place and time that I still dearly miss. I love this place and the fellowship of the people that live here. This is my personal never land. Still passionately burns in my heart. You can totally see that in here. I had to look up loblolly pines, and it looks like they're the pine trees that are the big, long stalks, and then there's just the leaves at the very top, which we don't really have here in New England, so those are interesting to me. But I thought it was great. It reminded me, actually, of, like, a southern song, like a country song. And the way it was written, the rhyming was perfect, and I could, as Feziano was reading it, I was hearing it musically, hearing it as like a song. So very beautiful, great little tribute. And I would love to see this musically. I think it's just perfect for that. So awesome job, Blues Man.
Excellent comment, Daniel. Thank you. And Feziano, what did you think of the poem?
I agree. It had a lyrical quality. Like, as I started reading it, I was like, oh, no, am I supposed to sing this? But I didn't know the tune. But it felt like it had a cadence and a rhyme that should be sung. So I can definitely feel that Bluesman had something in mind that I didn't quite know how to do it, but I felt like it should have been sung. And this sounds like beautiful nostalgia. It actually doesn't feel that different from here. I mean, like, Georgia's pretty far, I think, from BC. My geography is terrible, but the mountains, the trees, the orchards, the vineyards. Other than the loblolly pines, which I couldn't pronounce, so sorry about that. I was just thinking like lollipops when I looked at that. This is beautiful. It has this gentle feel that makes me just want to, like, go out and be in nature and enjoy the summer like a child.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. Thank you. Okay, Daniel, what do we have next?
Oh, we have lots of fun things here next. I'm going to post this on the board. And it will be one for you, Gray.
Okay,
now.
So this is Summer's Bravado by Andrew Blitman. Summer, the season of liberation from the constraints of winter and the expectations of spring, is the miraculous awakening of unyielding potential before the impending fall of snow from the sky greets the flowers that so merrily come alive in the twinkling sunlight of basking dreams, bleeding as they gleam, shimmering bright, revealing the freshly unconcealed aspirations that breathe life into them. The transpiration of youth refreshed, of summer's transformation, blossoming in the verdant fields as meadows of grasses and daffodils in bloom. End poem.
Awesome read.
I thought you did.
Great.
Oops, sorry, go ahead.
There you go.
Thank you.
No, go ahead, please.
No, you go. I read.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, and I was just going to say that was a great read. And let's go ladies first again and start with Feziano.
That felt like a very Canadian exchange, I have to say, for Canada Day. It was like, I'm sorry, you go. No, I'm sorry, you go. I'm sorry, you go. It's like this dance we do in front of a door where nobody will quite give in to being the person who does it. I know that's super stereotypical, but I'm Canadian. I'm talking about myself. Okay, so I thought this was beautiful. It really brought that feeling of summer to life, seeing it as a liberation. And, you know, I know for some people winter is constraints because maybe you can't get out because your street's not plowed, or you don't have, like, the clothes to bundle up, and, like, you're kind of, like, trapped in by the snow. I actually kind of like the snow, but I can see how it could feel like liberation as all that melts away. And if you're a student or a teacher and you have the summer off, then it really has that feeling of freedom as you have some extra time to play with. Although impending fall, it makes it sound like fall is a terrible thing. Fall is my favorite. So I wouldn't use impending, but I think for people who don't love the fall, that was a good word choice. And just the way it has aspirations that breathe life into them. This feels like it is alive, like the experience is meant to be truly lived. It uses the nature to create the colors, like talking about the daffodils. That's a very distinct yellow that comes with daffodils, so it paints the picture.
Excellent, Afasiana. Yes, absolutely. And, yes, I had to be nice to Gray because the Red Sox beat the Blue Jays today on Canada Day in Toronto. So any Canadian sports fan, sorry about that. I really agree. You took my took the words out of my mouth with that. It's interesting. I never really thought about it as a season of liberation, but it is, because springtime, you think about that springtime bloom, but everything's really still growing. It's not where it is, and it's like now they're alive, they're awake in the summertime. That's when everything is active. Everything is done growing, and they're just there, you know, living life. So that is really, really interesting way to think about it. And you know, even myself, and you know, in my 50s, you know, I work. I mean, I'm working the weekend. I'm working the 4th of July. I just always work all the time. I still feel that kind of summertime liberation. You know, like I said earlier, I went to a Comic-Con today. There's concerts this summer. Like, things happen in the summer. There's more of that. So it does, and you know, you don't have to wear a coat. There's a lot of reasons why it is liberation. And you know, in the twinkling sunlight of basking dreams, bleeding as they gleam, shimmering bright, revealing the freshly concealed aspirations that breathe them into life. So, you know, you've gone through the winter, you're, you know, in the springtime, everything's growing, and now you can live. And I can really see that, especially with the picture that they showed here. So, yeah, very, very cool. And you got to read it, great. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I really liked it. It had a nice cadence to it. But, you know, I don't know. To me, daffodils seem like a springtime thing, but that's just me. You know, I really enjoyed the transpiration of youth refreshed, of summer's transformation, blossoming in the burdened fields as meadows of grasses and daffodils in bloom. I mean, you can just picture it. It's such a pretty picture that he paints with his words. So I thought it was a fantastic write and deeply engaging as well. So great job.
Cool. And I posted the next one that I shall read, called A Thought for Every Season by Barty Bach. If a picture is worth a thousand words, what's a poem worth? Midsummer drowns in abundance down under. Southern solstice and fragrance. Gilded gown, drenched in tropical rains and thunderstorm. Crown of many gifts and pleasures, earth adorned. One season to another, gone in poppy born. A flower missed another's winter morn. A thought that's worth a thousand pictures wide. Of a song, a symphony of dance, light and gestures. Pantheon of color, our humble paragon. When winter's white and snowy rivers hide, the thorns we diggers sometimes think about, fire, sweat, and drought to dwell upon. Smell the roses, crack the ice, charm your shivers. We celebrate, live life, and carry on. And poem.
Great read, Daniel. I really enjoyed the poem. You know, he's got a way with words that's unique, and you can hear his voice in this, right? You know, I can hear him reading this as you read it. But I really enjoyed the song, A Symphony of Dance, Flight and Gestures, Pantheon of Color, Our Humble Paragon. Such a beautiful descriptive, right? It really engages the reader's mind and takes them to a place that's filled with beauty and summertime. So, excellent job. And what are your thoughts, Ephesiana?
I really liked the line, a thought that's worth a thousand pictures wide, because usually it's a picture's worth a thousand words, but a thought is worth a thousand pictures is a fun twist on that. It's like the pictures can't possibly capture how wonderful it is. And to drown in abundance, it kind of sounds like a negative thing, but at the same time, it's like there is so much beauty that it's like overwhelming. That's a pretty intense kind of way of expressing that. Creative wording.
Absolutely. And Daniel, you read it. What did you think?
I did, and I thought it was great. I won a gold for a pre-write contest, well deserved. And the wording was great, and the rhyming that Barty Buck did was really interesting. So it's a beautifully just written piece with the word choices. I don't know what the word I'm trying to say is. Adriana would know if I'm just thinking about the words and the sounds of the words, just beautifully, which is that. excuse me. But I thought it was really great. The thing, I don't know why this stood out to me, but when winter's white and snowy rivers high, the thorns we diggers sometimes think about. Smell at the end, smell the roses, crack the ice, charm your shivers, we celebrate life and carry on. I've just kind of noticed now, it just struck me that we write a lot of summer poems, including winter, kind of like, let's enjoy the summer now before the winter comes. That seems to be a lot, and it's always a very interesting thing. And I have to start paying attention. I'm going to try to remember this for the winter and the fall to see if people are doing, when they write winter poems, if they're also talking about the summer. And it's interesting how we always have to compare, right? We're always looking at, you know, this is kind of off topic of the poem itself, but I just think it's interesting of how as human beings, we're always kind of looking for that. Well, let's do this now because it can be horrible in the winter, or here's the winter, geez, can't wait for summer. You're always kind of, you know, looking ahead instead of kind of concentrating on what's happening, always thinking like, well, what's coming up. And I just thought that was interesting. I've noticed at least the last couple of them. But in general, the poem was amazing. You know, like I said, a beautiful pleasure to read and very, very, very well written. So cool. All right, I guess we are moving on with life. And I'm going to post another one for you, Ephesiana. And this is from one of your favorite people, Ben Hart. Ben told me that he... too late for him, and he's gonna listen to it in the morning, the show, like he usually does every morning. So I posted that for you.
Okay. What Am I Supposed to Do Now? By Ben Hart. 1. Maybe. They love me, they say. And in a way, I know how much they mean it. Just not the one I wanted. The one of which I am unworthy. True love, someone to hold and never let go. Mercy. 2. Trust. I am many things, many names, many thoughts, but the one thing that remains throughout is I cannot trust what is unloved, and I am unloving in touch, word, or essence, in musts, blur, and presence. If only you could see how I see you, how I love, and how much it asks of me, and demands of the rest. I don't want to be just someone else to lose. I want to be lost by you, the one you loved best, who you followed and then never left. When he let you into his head, you saved his life, and spending with you, no regrets. In an unloved world, we had something to prove to the gods of our youth upon every stolen sunset. Three, the foal, the herd. Cold is the morrow when light is but a foal, born onto a world of sorrow, unstable and unwhole. And it is a place, not a time, a state, but not of mind, fate, but unaligned, and it's not beyond, tomorrow lies behind. It's just catching up with us, and by the time it passes, like a herd in the dust, and suffering itself has had enough. Look up if you must, if you need even more to feel unfastened. And don't be disheartened, young foal, by every step unsteady, because it's still a step ahead. And if they're going in the opposite direction, that doesn't mean it's backwards. Either heading, it's still away. Four, here. Are you here to be heard or to listen? Are you ready to find out if you existed? A warrior who fought so other may surrender, and not just pillar, pauper, pariah, and pretender. This world needs not another defender, but someone to mend it, because money men will think it's theirs, whereas we all just lend it, but somehow nobody cares. If you fill their hands with something to spend, how quick they'll vilify our differences. Whatever existence is, it's shared, so you could only have existed if someone else was there. See you in my nightmares. Five. See you around. I was so sure someone would come. God would let me in. Death would let me win. Or at least run till I got sick of it. That numb would for once numb everything and not just leave me with just the worst bits, telling me to make another wish and wait around for it, telling me to jump head first into every abyss, telling me she hated that kiss and I should slit my wrist, break another promise to Eve, my sentient sister, that I would so outlive her. Guess all I did was prove something, that she was stronger, or at least better at running, because I couldn't take it any longer. So I gave in again. Just when they all thought I was coming back, I furthermore got lost and nevermore came home. Just to let you down. I guess that's the best they'll get, is seeing me around. Because as beloved Keaton said, it's been raining in my favorite house, and between those walls I'll always drown, forever bound inside my head. Six, exit. May the walk to the door forget it had to end, and may you wonder until you cease to weather it why you ever went. End poem.
Wow, that was an amazing read of Asiana. And, you know, Ben is such a deep thinker. You know, he really puts depth into his poems and goes deep into his mind and his heart with his rites. And this is no less the case. You know, it's a powerful rite on existing in the life that we live and being part of the herd and not being part of the herd and living and dying and giving up but not giving up. And I just thought it was just a deeply intellectual poem, really takes some thought to understand his meaning, and I really found it definitely engaging. You know, he really captures your imagination with his work, and he's such a powerful writer that, you know, you're forced to think and engage in his write, which is a powerful thing, so... Beautiful write, Ben, and great read of Asiana. And Daniel, what are your thoughts?
It was a lot of fun to listen to and read, as always, Ben. Ben, if you're listening, which I know you will be, I have a question for you. I got to read some of your older poems, and you've come into this style that's your calling card, where you do the sections and the longer. And I was curious if there's a reason to that, if why that appeals to you. So anyway, you can tell me later, Ben, but I'm always curious about that. I'm going to read the titles because I think they're really interesting. So it says, Maybe, Trust, Befold the Herd, Here, Spew Around, Exit. And I think it's an interesting way about relationships, because maybe in trust, so they say they love me, they say, and in a way I know how much they mean it, just not the one I wanted. And it's almost a retrospective in all relationships where maybe, I don't know, I'm meeting this person, I don't know if we're going to like them, and then, okay, we start to put some trust out there in them. And the foal and the herd is really interesting to me. Cold is the morrow when light is but a foal, born into a world of sorrow, unstable and unwhole. I do like it when Ben rhymes, by the way, as well. But a foal is so fragile. You know, if you've ever seen a newborn horse, it's just like one of the most fragile things you'll ever see. And that can be when at the beginning of relationships, right? And then you're there, but then see you around and exit. You know, maybe things aren't working out. So I just kind of took it like that, and it was really interesting to me. But great write, as always, Ben. Thank you very, very much.
Excellent comment, Daniel. Thank you. And Aficiana, what did you think?
Well, I don't really see fools as that fragile. I mean, yes, they are delicate, but at the same time, they, you know, are born standing, basically. They're running almost right away. So I kind of took that as the relationship, like, starts off running weak, but able to get around on its own. It's not like a human baby where it has to, like, slowly be nurtured. It's just, like, there and maybe not ready for what it runs into. But it's, I don't know, I see foals as, like, kind of beginning almost fully formed, which can be risky because they are still delicate.
I agree totally with that, absolutely. Certainly much, much better than a human baby, which would, you know, would not survive like 5 minutes without its mother, but I totally agree with you on that.
I also really liked the line, and not just pillar, pauper, pariah, and pretender. I mean, I'm kind of a sucker for alliteration, so that had some really nice P sounds, and P is really good for alliteration because it's got that, like, pop. But also, the word choices were not just, like, run-of-the-mill P words. The pillar, pauper, pariah, and pretender all fit so well in that sentence. They were not just thrown in there because they sounded right. They were intentional, and they worked both in terms of their meaning and the way it sounded. He definitely has a lot of philosophy and thought and feeling in his work. I like how he switches up the format. I was giving him heck for it yesterday, but I actually really do like that he changes the spacing depending on what section. So, like, to me, when it has the bigger spaces, like in section 6, I try to slow down because it's like that big space is telling you to, like, ponder that line and be considerate of that it doesn't all just flow together. There's supposed to be breaks there. He also made a reference here to Keaton, and he had recently sent me some music by someone named Keaton, and one of the songs was It's Been Raining in My Favorite House. So he's referencing some real music there, and it adds even more to the poem if you're familiar with that song, so it's worth checking out.
Excellent comment, Aficiana. Thank you so much. Okay, Daniel, where are we to next?
We have one more summer one here, and this is by Budo, which I haven't heard from in a while. Great to hear from. So this is all you, Gray. I just posted it.
All righty. I will get to that.
And while you're looking for it, I do want to welcome Hope Soul to the board. And Silent Tree got his internet up running, so he's there. And Bill said Ben is amazing. So we got a good crowd going on the board here.
That's great. Glad to have you along, Silent Tree, and Bill Borden, and Hope. Okay, so this is Summer Sigh by Budo. On a bluff in a future residential zone, did we play and cavort hot summer days, grabbing bike mates and wheeling freedom as time flew in fleeting gasps and lit streetlights calling home. The adventures seemed endless. Jeff and me hugging our dinghy, rowing canals, banked in earth mounds, cap guns perched to defend at all costs. Our toys and hobbies were welcomed in this land of boyhood wonders. G.I. Joes and equipment skirting embankments, Estes rockets launching skyward with a captive live insect payloads. We would pass the distinct growth of bush, overgrown with the passing of seasons. I never gave it much thought until the day we decided to invade. We crept stealthily up to the bushes, careful of enemy booby traps, but we were taken by complete surprise at the precious cargo contained. Inside the bushes, a rustic hulk of fence, standing perimeter guard for those sleeping, a dozen headstones of a Confederate cemetery. Jeff and I stood awestruck in belief, amazed at what we discovered that day. From then on, our focus was spending some time with the falling, promising to tend the stones and spruce up the overgrowth. A good part of summer break was camped there, cleaning as much as possible and sitting in complete silence for what seemed like hours, treating it as it was, hallowed grounds. Fall came without incident, and school became our occupier. I moved the following year and quietly lost touch with Jeff, who fell in love with a rough bunch in high school, ending up incarcerated with a mom's broken heart. Years later, I drove back to the site, now paved and segregated in square green lots with massive vinyl-sided homes sneering back. I wondered what had happened to the gravesite, hoping that they were moved safely, sighed a silent prayer, and drove home. End poem.
Awesome, awesome read. What a great story. I usually read lyrical stuff and hear Bruto singing, of which everybody should look him up. He's actually on iTunes and has some great songs on there. But this is an amazing story, and I get that living in Boston here in New England, there's like a ton of cemeteries like that around here. There's actually one literally, I mean, I'm not even kidding, a stone's throw away from my house. I could walk there in 1 minute. That has some grave sites from back in the 1600s. You know, and I can go to Boston and see some pilgrims buried and so forth there. So those Confederate cemeteries, those old cemeteries, are really amazing, and they fall apart, you know, and it seems almost sacrilegious, like you want to keep that there. You know, it made me think of the times when I see, unfortunately, people like that deface grave sites, and I just don't get that. But what a really interesting and great memory for him and his friend, and what a great way to bond. My son's actually doing that now. He's with this girl, and for whatever reason, they've decided to clean the town, like literally. They're literally going around and kind of trying to clean up the town when they have some spare time, and it kind of reminded me a little bit of that. But a great little great story, and I really just love that that's what he thought of with summer, that was his, wasn't describing summer, wasn't anything like that. It was just this beautiful story that it's his, you know, his memory of summer, or a memory of some kids. So, really interesting, Bruto. Great job. I enjoyed it a lot. Fiziano, your turn.
Well, I can see that this was like a defining summer for him, and I think people have that like one summer that is like their key. This was the summer that really stuck with them. And it starts off with that nostalgia that, you know, sent me into nostalgia of, like, playing with the G.I. Joes and using the nature as, like, the embankment that the armies were going to go through. I was the only girl in my neighborhood, so I played with the boys. We definitely, that sounds like my life. But then it has the more seriousness of finding the cemetery. And I kind of like that it was found by playing with these toy soldiers, because they were imagining being soldiers, and then they found, it seems like, real soldiers. And then they had respect for the difference between the toys and then the real life situation of those graves. But then, you know, life moves on, you drift apart from those childhood friends, and to come back and see it has all changed can be really painful, because it's like you've lost that connection. You can't always go home to those summer memories the way that you'd like to. It's different. And then he thinks of it in both ways. It's different from the fun times, but it's also potentially displaced the serious part that he did have some respect for. And he worries about how that was treated. So this has like a mix of the playful and the serious, and I think that's a good representation of summer or any season, because there's going to be different aspects to it. I've missed Budo. He usually, like, I normally see him around a lot, and I love his songs, and I haven't seen anything for a while, so it's good to see his writing, even if this is an older piece.
Absolutely it is. I just still around Budo. He's in Hawaii, I believe. Me, I might be wrong, but I think he is. And Gray, what are your thoughts?
I really enjoyed the nostalgia of it, you know. I mean, I think, you know, almost, I don't know if all kids did it, but, you know, we used to play soldiers and war, and, I mean, we never put insects on rockets, but, you know, I could see doing that if we could. And, you know, I enjoyed the youthfulness of that play and the progression to growth, you know, and finding the graveyard and realizing that it was Confederate soldiers that lay there, and you know, trying to help clean that up and bring them some peace, even though they're resting at peace. You know, you wanted to help clean it up and bring it to a better status that it was. But then to, you know, like you said, like Apaciano was saying, to grow apart from your friends and come back and have that gone, you know, that's got to be shocking. I mean, I guess it happens. And, you know, now you've got final-sided houses sneering back at you. And, you know, you wonder what happened to the gravesite and hoping they were moved safely. So I thought it was beautiful, right? You know, very touching, for sure. Deeply engaging, exactly. So that's great. Thank you for sharing, Budo.
Absolutely. All right. And, yeah, and Bill said, all the days of playing soldiers with stick guns. Yeah, I do remember playing all that. Thanks there. And Silent Chief said, wow, wonderful piece of nostalgia, great read, beautiful, right? Well done, Noodle. Excellent. All right, so we are going to move on. I think we're going to start the next contest. So the two ones that I have up, the two poems are actually personal. They're pictures from my honeymoon about, we're going on 30 years ago now. We went to Wales and England for 2 weeks, a week in Wales and a week in England. And it was beautiful because it was in the fall and there was like literally nobody there. And so are we doing the castle one now, I think, correct? But that was anybody on the board that looks at the picture, it's a picture of a castle, and to the right you can't see was a little hotel or a bed and breakfast that we stayed at. The only people in the whole place and the castle, we actually got a private tour of the castle, and the guy that gave us a castle tour actually gave me a sword fighting lesson, because there was nobody else there. So he literally gave me like a sword fighting lesson, and it was actually very, very cool. So anyway, that's what it is. It's just a picture of a castle on the side of a hill in Wales. Anybody's never been to Wales or England, it's amazing, because you just find these 1,000-year-old castles in the middle of nowhere, just sitting there, and it's pretty amazing. Anyway, that's
cool.
So Yeah, it was really cool. I loved it. And it is 100% where Middle Earth was. Wales looks exactly like the descriptions of Middle Earth from Tolkien. So there's no doubt in my mind. Sorry, it's not New Zealand. Sorry, Peter Jackson. It is Wales, England. And with that said, let's, I got a sword hit, Bill, a sword fighting lesson from some guy who ran a castle. It's pretty cool. Probably the last time I touched the sword. Anyway, let's crank on here. And you just read the last one, right? So I think this is my turn. Or, yeah, you read the last one, right? Like, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I will read this one here, First Castle One. It's a brevity by Lou Russum, 1985. Or Castle on a Hill. A castle sits on top of a high hill in the moving clouds, home to kings and queens, aloud, close to the moonlight shining down, visitors welcome to come inside and look around. End poem.
Great read, Daniel. And I liked it. You know, it was short, it was sweet, to the point. You know, it has this castle sitting up high in the moving clouds, home to kings and queens. Visitors were allowed to come inside and look around. You know, it's very to the point, and I liked it. What are your thoughts, Viviana?
It's very, like, accessible, you know, simple language, and you know, describes the image very well. It has a peaceful quality to it.
Great comment, thank you. And Daniel, you read it. What did you think?
I agree with the phrasing on it. It's very peaceful. I like the word "aloud" kind of by itself on a line. I thought was very interesting, and kind of splits the poem a little bit in half. Talking about kings in the beginning, and then kind of visitors welcome below that. So I thought that was very interesting. But yeah, beautiful, just descriptive brevity that sets the tone. Nice job.
Great comment. Thank you.
All right. And Aphasiana, I'm going to put one up by Ruby for you. And it's a comment, I promise. All right. There. It should be there now.
Castle of Fantasies by Ruby 2446. Above the village it lurked, now a shell of its former self, long since abandoned before me and my friends were born. To the owls, foxes, and fantasies, we shrouded our castle in. As children, it housed our colorful kings, beautiful queens, princes and princesses, fairy tales spilled from its wall into the gardens of the tree houses, us playing the roles as we imagined. As teens, we pictured grand balls and grander romances, four-poster beds, knights and knights of passion, damsels in distress being rescued and taught, the art of loving maids and ladies vying for the royals' affections and attentions. As young adults, we heard stories unspoken in the earshot of children of debauchery and torture, dungeons with dragons where games of domination and submission were the entertainment for the inhabitants and their friends. Chains and ropes and previously unseen paraphernalia were discovered. Leaving the village, where the castle had overshadowed life, my imagination still filled with the childhood wonder it gifted us, romantic imaginings that ran parallel to our teenage awakenings, stories of dark, seemingly forbidden erotic practices, giving much to ponder on the excitements that might be available to adults. End poem.
Well, awesome read. And I enjoyed that. You know, it goes from being a child in your imagination to being more adult in your imagination. And, you know, stories of dark, seemingly forbidden erotic practices giving much to ponder on the excitements that might be available to adults. And, you know, our mind is a powerful thing, and, you know, and nothing like an abandoned castle to help fuel that imagination. So I thought it was just an excellent take on the prompt and very well written. So, great job. Thank you for sharing, Ruby 2446. And Daniel, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are she had a very interesting young adulthood. where she was going with this. But I agree. It kind of taking you through the difference, the different ways and growing up, right? As children, you're just kind of playing this. And as teens, you're picturing romance. And as young adults, well, you know, puberty takes over, and there you go. Those are your thoughts right there. And then you kind of move on to adulthood. So basically describing in eroticism, you know, how we all kind of grow up, and a lot of times that's where thoughts all go there. But really interesting where she took the picture. But I thought it was beautifully written and done. And that one line here, the children went up into the gardens and treehouses, us playing the roles we imagined. And you know, I remember that obviously kind of running around, and I couldn't help but think of Dungeons and Dragons, you know, even though Dungeons without Dragons, I thought was a really interesting play on that, where the games of domination submission. So took a play on not playing games anymore. So yeah, interesting and fun and really, really great way, really great direction she took it. So thank you, Ruby.
Great comment, Daniel. Thank you. And Ephesiana, you read it. What did you think?
I loved it. I thought it was really playful and whimsical, and it did explore the different kind of stages of imagination throughout our lives, and how something like an abandoned castle can make you curious about things in many different ways. And that's the thing about something like that, where it's so ancient, many things could have happened there. And if it's something that you never really get a good look at, it's just kind of off in the distance, and you can imagine whatever you want is there. And it could be wonderful things, it could be scary things, it could be whatever it is, and at your different ages, you have different kinds of things that you may imagine. I really liked the wordplay of knights and nights, like one spelt as in like evening and one spelt as in the knight in shining armor, the knights and knights of passion. I thought that was fun, the way that it used the homonyms there. This is wonderful. I'm kind of a medieval nerd who like dresses up and goes to castles for real and fights. Like you're talking about your sword fighting. I'm like, I actually do that still. So this is just, I don't know. This is one after my own heart.
That's cool. And in the group, Bill Borden says, really covers the spectrum of imagination and its evolution from childhood to the adult temptation. And Silent Tree says, a fantastic piece full of pondering from the throat, the years of childhood to adulthood. Great read and beautiful write, Ruby 2446. So thank you for sharing those comments. All right, Daniel, what do we have next?
We have another one from Ben that I'm going to post for you. Yes, and Bill says, I love medieval times. We have a medieval fair that comes around here in the fall, and my wife and I decided, we haven't gone a couple of years, we're definitely going this year, which the Phasiana I know goes all the time, but we're going to ours this year. And I'm not going to dress up, but she might actually dress up. So the one from Ben is posted, and go ahead, whenever you're ready.
Okay, this is called We Are Here, Remember Now, by Ben Hart. One, to knock it down. We're not just one. We're all of naught, so much of nothing that something forms, twisted. They will have loved us, will they not? They will have loved us. She will be beautiful, and so she will be loved. As something watch, kept. She looks at walls, away at page, not at me. That would be ruin. She tries to remember all she couldn't catch, everything uncaught, unmoored in meaning, every time the pen just took over and her back hunches to show her welding, and her hair hangs like willows autumn, never to fall, just gently let down. And she looks at the floor, at water, and friend, and realities pretend that would await her. Every time she stepped away, every time the story had to end, and thinks how much more free she had been, just staring at wall, never to fall too far from the page, or find herself only moving a pen, and not present mind, building monuments to another's loss, to exit orbit. Sometimes we must exit our orbit and just drift whichever way to find something non-existent and make it a place. It's for God that I went and for you that I stayed. Those so brave as to break away, even if just for a moment, and not fear missing anything, because you know now is the only time there will ever be. Everything is a moment, and this one, I'm still in it, even if I'm doing me 3 deep emotions. And when the day cools and our stretch of earth moves beyond the kiln, what shall I be then? But a man well met in tepid winds, stirred by summer symphonies and the tender still canopies of evergreen and bruising blue. And my captain tells me I should write more of love and so wonder if I'm wrong. And I'm not, in fact, the architect who for years paid himself by the way he saw what he made. Stir something in your eyes which would otherwise have only been stilled. Oh, captain, here I thought I was redeemed for all my wrath and talk of death. I also healed what I had left, that like dusk, I too was a temperate destruction, and not, like love, just the end of the world. Well, here I am in my feelings for the choice. Here I am. I scream as she is leaving again, and I never toiled with it, because I kept you somewhere close for strangers to peruse, though I toil with it, that I let them in on the life I am denying us every time I let us leave unseen. So here I am, I scream, and her hand is at the door, but she halts, and light to my moth eyes, she smiles. Why must it be so grand, Ben? Why not love me because of how small I can be? Why must I be pole star or galaxy even, and not molehill or dung beetle? Why must I be goddess and not just a woman you love more than most? And I'll tell her, I don't know, but I know that it would break this heart and everyone beyond. And I'll let her know, I'll tell her, I know it's not fair. I must drag her into my eternal, because I don't want to go down alone with a ship I never captained. A loving body unloved because it felt ill without your touch. And I don't want to be sick anymore. And she'll breathe deep and weigh the door handle and look at me again. A storm, something to move, my tideless empty, the coming home of waves. Pass me the moment without making it immortal. Let it die with me, let it die. For if all's grand, the echo will never end. Confine yourself to being Ben, because I came to love the one, but not the rest of them. So you will sign away 1,000 lifetimes of happiness, just so you can get to call me yours in this life. 5. My heart is your museum. Let it be, and let it take you to reprieve and remembrance and resurrection anew. A lifetime of looking for the eyes that knew the music of mine. And they call it music because it reminds you of her, the muse, the love, the wound within, the woman, the moment, the earth, and her house eternal, the coliseum of muse that once only existed in the head of the pugilist blue. It will bear my name, but honor her, the champion in red. 6. Lullaby Lucifer. You looked at me and asked, what is the furthest we could go before reaching worlds abandoned? And what if we only listen to foreign songs so we can make up our own stories and have something just for ourselves? Because I love you in this shared space, God's holy hotel, no vacancy, dry hell. Where the silver pines grow higher than Babel ever dared, and the devil tells stories about the wolves in those woods, and now their yellow eyes look like gods on his worst days. And had you asking, were I to be loved, would death not be a devourer, but just another feeling? 7. E. Brother, oh brother, Can you see the beacons trail away like stars? Can you feel the thrumming of the dark horse herd running through our heartland, the battleground beating where a man must kill himself 1,000 times again before he gets it right and finally gets to leave this loud, the sound of dust gathering? The world is not in your head or in your heart. It is in every lost moment where we ran too far just to catch the bruised twilight. 8, wrong timeless. This is my world, but you moved in with somebody else and covered the hills in your love for him. And in a place I intended to know peace, I went to war against a timeless wrong. And I promise you, something is coming. And in some funny twist of fate, all I ever wrote was just the silence before the storm. End poem.
Awesome read. Seven parts, that might be a record for bands. Good job. And the whole thing, I actually was having a conversation with somebody about this today. The whole thing reminded me of just the mind controlling the body is what, I don't know, you know, I'm not 100% sure why, that's what I was thinking about with this, that how much the mind can control the body. I was trying to look for the part, but it says here, a loving body, unloved, because it felt ill. Without your touch, I don't want to be sick anymore. But because it felt ill without your touch, so it's like it's not anything wrong with him, but he's missing this person, and his mind doing that is making him ill. And that's what I was focusing on. I don't know if it's just because that's Ben's style, but that's what I could just kind of feel the whole time. And she'll breathe deep and weigh the door handle and look at me again, a storm. It was really, really interesting. So amazing. I mean, I could kind of keep going through all these stanzas as usual, Ben, with your poems, but that's what I got out of it, and I thought you did a beautiful job with it. Excellent, excellent. Faziana, there's something going on in your head. I know there is.
Well, you know I love Ben. When it talks about she tried to remember all she couldn't catch, everything uncaught, unmourned in meaning, every time the pen just took over, I mean, I relate to that so hard because my brain issues, I mean, my name, Aphasiana, comes from aphasia, which is, you know, the brain damage that makes language difficult. And I certainly have a lot of words and ideas that I can't catch and that I desperately want to get down on the page. And then sometimes the pen just does take over and I don't even know what I'm doing, but half of my writing just kind of happens on its own without me processing it. So I feel like when he's talking about this woman who's just like staring at the wall, and that's when she feels the most free, is when she can just find herself moving the pen and not have to deal with the outside world. That's totally me, but I know he's talking about like his muse, but like his theoretical muse, not a real person, as far as I know. But I relate to that part really hard. There was a part that I should have highlighted because I really wanted to quote. Okay, well, I can't find that, but also the part about the foreign songs. I totally feel that. Like when you, sometimes if I'm really stuck, I will listen to songs in a language I don't understand because you feel the emotion of it, and it's like, you make up your own story, and then I end up making my own stuff just because I'm trying to figure out what they could possibly have been saying, and I'm always totally wrong about what they said, but it works. So I thought that was cool that someone else does that, but I can't find the section that I wanted to talk about. There's a lot in here that's really good. I just won't even try to find it. I'll comment later because it's amazing. That's the thing, is his pieces are so long that sometimes I get kind of like lost trying to figure out one part and then I miss the next part because I have to like reread. But that's good. So, thank you.
I do the same thing. I say, well, I'm going to talk about that, and then I keep listening, and I completely forget. Most of the time I end up talking about the last section because that's the one I can – I've already kind of moved past the other one, so yeah, I do the same thing. Greg, you got to read it. What's your thoughts?
You know, like I said, his writes are very deep and thoughtful. You know, he puts a lot of thought into his write, and it's definitely takes your mind on a journey and really engages you in his poetry throughout the write, you know, keeps you thinking. And I really like that, you know. I like both of your interpretations of the write, and I kind of feel the same as you, Daniel, that, you know, the mind controlling the body and the battle that lies therein. And I thought it was just a powerful write on that subject of love playing a role in our minds and on our body. So I thought it was a powerful write. And, you know, in every lost moment where we ran too far just to catch the bruised twilight succumb to the dark, I mean, that's hard-hitting words right there. And the whole thing is filled with that kind of catchy phrasing that really capture the imagination. And I really like that penultimate stanza where it says, "This is my world, but you moved in with someone else and covered the hills in your love for him. And in a place I intended to know peace, I went to war against a timeless wrong. And I promise you, something is coming. And in some funny way, 20 twist of fate, all I ever wrote was just the silence before the storm." I mean, that really gets you thinking, and I like that about Ben's work. It really makes you think. Excellent write, and I just wanted to read some of the comments of Bill Borden and Silent Tree. It says, Bill Borden says, "Well, that took me on a journey from love to the battlefield. Amazing, all tied together so perfectly." And then Silent Tree said, "Wow, a very epic piece. So many great parts in this piece. Another amazing write by Ben, and a great read, and very well written, Ben." And then Bill Borden says, "It feels as if he's telling the story of him losing his love and humanity to head for battle. But at the same time, the battle for that love. Ben, I applaud you, good sir." So great comments on the board as well. And thank you for sharing, Ben.
Absolutely. All right, what we're going to do is take a little break from the contest and read the open poetry that we had posted here. So I'm going to post one now, and I think it's your turn, Afasiana. And this is a fun little one by Stelina called Naming Cats. So there you go. I just posted it for you.
Oh, this has got a SoundCloud.
Oh, it does. Okay. Hey, you're off the hook.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll play that.
The naming of cats is a difficult matter, for they are so discerning in propriety. When they all get together for a lengthy natter, partaking in smoked salmon sandwiches and tea, they are far too sophisticated for idle chatter. Therefore, mundane names could never be. Their pets have bestowed on them such awful appellations, like Whiskers, Fluffy, Socks, and Spats, which encourage from them many condemnations. These fussy felines, such proud pussycats, far be it for them to possess such affectations, but names such as those are only suitable for rats. Amongst themselves they are much more urbane, with titles befitting their superior stance, such as Rupert, Reginald, Dominic, or Dane. In their clan there's even a Lord Lionel and Sir Lance. To answer to lesser titles is their eternal bane, and for food they are led such a merry dance. Their bloodlines reach back to ancient Egypt. They are true blue-blooded, through and through. From golden chalices, their milk they sipped, wearing collars encrusted with gemstones of blue. With sacred mystique, they fairly dripped, worshipped by the pharaohs as deities true. So next time a cat owns you, please beware, and sure you gift them a name of good choice, or whenever you call them, they'll give you the stare, and their response will be most indignant in voice. Make them comfy upon your best armchair, and please present them with lots of cool toys. Then maybe, just maybe, they'll forgive you for being a human.
Wow, that was brilliant. I really enjoyed that. I mean, she has such a fantastic SoundCloud capability. You know, her SoundClouds are spot on always. And I really enjoyed that. I mean, you know, cats have a different way of being. They're so royal and regal, and, you know, their nose is snubbing most of the time. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the personality that she brought to the cat. So excellent write and a great SoundCloud, Stelina. Thank you so much for sharing. And Daniel, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought this was absolutely a lot of fun. I loved it. Thanks, Delina. And cats are interesting. I used to be a dog person. This came to a cat story is where I got out of this. But the cat I have now, we got at a shelter, I guess. And when he came home, somebody came to our house, dropped him off. He ran under my bed for 2 weeks. And I'm not joking, for 2 weeks. He would come out at night to go to the litter box when we were sleeping. I had to lie on the floor and reach my hand in and sit there for 5 minutes, and he would kind of come up to it, and I'd leave food for him. He was very camera shy about any person. Finally, after 2 weeks, he came out and literally came up on bed with me and, like, snuggled next to me while I was sleeping. And as soon as I got up, he ran under the bed again. And, like, 2 days later, he kind of walked out. And it took a while for him to get to us, and now he can't stop snuggling. He's the snuggle thing, and loves us, but he's still camera shy when people come in. And my point to that is cats do have personalities, and it was a comedy, but there was a movie called Meet the Parents where Robert De Niro talks about how, you know, Ben Stiller says, I'm more of a dog person. Like, really? You really just want some dumb animal that's just going to love you no matter what, like with nothing? You have to earn a cat's respect. Like a cat, it takes work to actually get them to love you. And you know, I laughed at the joke, but then once I got a cat, I was like, it really is true. There, you have to actually work at that that respect to get them to like you. And that's kind of what this reminded me of. So it was a lot of fun. So sorry for the story, everyone, but that's all I was thinking about as it was going on. That's what it meant to me.
That's a fantastic story. Thank you for sharing that, Daniel. And, yeah, cats do have their own way. You know, you have to earn their respect, like it was said in that Meet the Parents, which I just watched the other day, actually. And, I liked it. You know, it was a fantastic movie. And that scene where the cat gets out and climbs the trellis and takes off was great. Great reference. Thank you for sharing that. And Epasiana, what did you think?
I loved it. I thought it was really creative. I like that she calls it a dramedy, because it totally is. It has, like, the comedy, but it also has, like, a little bit of drama mixed in there. It has such flair and personality and really acknowledges the kind of attitude that a lot of cats have, where they do kind of demand the respect. And I like that it talks about how they have they are far too sophisticated for idle chatter. It's not like a dog where they'll just kind of like bark, 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 bark. Cats are fairly strategic in their choice of time to meow. they're not one for small talk. I like their pets have bestowed on them such awful appellations, which implies that the humans are the pets. And who are we to be naming them? I thought that was a really nice twist on things because I'm sure that they do see it that way. A lot of animals do. I mean, we're the ones who feed them and, like, clean up their poop and, like, all those things. Like, they must think that we are their servants. And I like that it had that kind of recognition there and was a twist on the view of things. I'm really happy she did a SoundCloud because her reading was perfect and it had nice little bouncy music in the background.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's true.
Very common, I think,
It's true that's I was just gonna say what she said about the cat is true. It's that, and it's the same thing with dogs. They say, you know, if an alien's looking down and seeing, you know, a person basically being pulled by this dog and just to carry their crap afterwards, it's like, who's really in charge here? So yeah, the pets are definitely in charge. I agree with you, Faziana.
Yeah. I was going to read some quotes, some comments from the group. Bill Borden says, very clever and witty, right by Stella. I have four cats and have definitely got the stare. LOL, his name is Mr. Business because he means it. And then Silent Tree said, wow, I love this poem. Very clever and playful piece, beautifully composed. I also laughed a bit as the cat noises on the SoundCloud got my cat up and looking around. Great and wonderful, creative, Selena. So great comments on the board as well.
Cool. And Lou Yu's on the board too. She said she's at her mom. So hey, Lou Yu, and hey, Mother Lou Yu. Thanks for joining. All right, we have some more open poetry here, and this one is for you. So we have Hope Soul, who I think is still on the board. We're going to read yours, Hope. I want to post this for you, Faziana. And there it is.
You Nurture My Nature by Hope Soul. Our bodies press together, cultivating sweet scented oils as we melt into one another, candelabrums sculpted by the summer solstice, which heat pales against our own. Essence of you mix in me, sweeter than any wine. All of nature sips, getting drunk off us. Rest your crown into the henna bouquet that springs forth from my breast. Your fruit's sugary taste ripens from the love the sun has to warm your silk. Apples drop to the forest floor where my flowers rush to bloom and open delicate pink pomegranate-scented petals to catch your orchard. Release nectar that Serotina bees buzz here and there for and are envious of. Kiss Egyptian honeycomb to your root. Let me live your shade. I find myself grounded in you, far beyond vines of evergreens which wrap around blue jacaranda spotted violet. Mi corazón opens up every bud with just your touch. Take me into your wilderness, nightingale blissful days, skies, moon, and star crystals all gather together and weep, raining down sweet, cherishing amour to nourish dark soil. Have our toes spread out and push down upon the mossy dirt so my cherries can reach your lips. Take me into your embrace where lovers, spirits, bodies flourish. End poem.
Beautiful read, Faziana. And I really liked it. You know, she captures the senses. You know, it's very sensory. Our bodies press together, cultivating sweet-scented oils as we melt into one another. Candelabrum sculpted by the summer solstice, which heat pales against our own. Essence of you mixed in me, sweeter than any wine. All of nature sips, getting drunk on us. You know, I think that, you know, like two lovers coming together can be such a powerful force that, you know, it makes the world seem intoxicated around you. And, you know, I don't know if that's just your own intoxication or whether it's the world being intoxicated by your your love, which is powerful. But I really loved it. It's a beautiful love poem to her wonderful Nuno. So great job. Thank you for sharing. Hope and an excellent read with Asiana. All right, Daniel, what did you think?
I agree. It is beautiful to Nuno, whose poem we're going to read next. And I did like the summer theme to this, actually. So where she did have all of the apple dropped to the forest floor, delicate pink pomegranate scented petals. There's so much in her vines of evergreen, which wrap around blue, jacaranda, spotted violet, and I really like the end. Take me into your embrace where lovers' spirits' bodies flourish, and that was an amazing read of Phasiana of that end part. I could feel that. But I like that, and I really like the the composition of it, where you can kind of see, you know, it starts off kind of straight, a little bit wiggly, but then it's kind of spreading around till it's just almost unstable at the end, almost like you're with someone that loves you, and you become kind of out of control with that. So I thought that was really beautiful. But great. Good job, Hope. Thanks for sharing.
Excellent comment, Daniel. And Apaziana, you read it. What did you think?
I thought it was wonderful. It was very sensual, but not, like, explicit. So it was comfortably sensual. I don't know. I can be kind of, like, blushing when I read that kind of stuff. But I felt, like, comfortable saying it because of the way that it was worded in a classy manner, using the fruit and the flowers. And, you know, it definitely had some obviously sexual imagery, but it did it in a classy way. And call me crazy, but to me it looks like it's the shape of a mermaid. The way that the text goes, like it's spaced in such a way that at the end I really thought that was like a mermaid tail. I could just be making that up, but to me it looks like a mermaid.
Oh. Yeah, I can see that. Can I call you crazy and agree that it looks like a mermaid? Can I do both things?
Yes. Yeah,
okay,
definitely.
No, that's interesting. All right, cool. So where are we now here? We on the everyone did everyone comment on that? I'm losing. There's only three of us, and I still lost track anyway. I think we're good, right? All right, let's move on here. This one is for me to read. And this is by Nuno. This is called Graveyard. Moonlight never shows up for lunch. The sun, on the other hand, always grins up there between the clouds, showing me those killer teeth. Brain here is a boxer all roughed up, but he is stubborn enough not to call it quits. Here goes another beer to keep those gloves up. Hide your chin, champ. The bell hasn't rung yet. I will raise my beer bottle, drink to death, and then to living. And after, I will make love to a poem, or paint my brain all over my phone, perhaps both or none. One thing is certain, for certain, the dog barks. When Ubers knock, the poems die, and showerheads claim me hostage once or twice a week. End poem.
Great read, Daniel. And I liked it. You know, it was kind of dark, but deeply engaging. I mean, you know, he has a way with words that capture the imagination, you know. I will raise my beer bottle, drink to death, and then to the living. And after, I will make love to a poem or paint my brain all over my phone, perhaps both or none, you know. Such a powerful imagery and a fascinating write on being alive yet, you know, on the edge of death as well. So, but also I really like when showerheads claim me hostage once or twice a week. I mean, you know, I like that imagery of, you know, being held hostage by a showerhead once or twice a week. It's just a fascinating write. And Apaziana, what did you think?
Is it you mutating? Oh, she has to go. She actually said she has to go. She said thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, okay.
So
all right, Danny. All right,
Fazia. I thought it was really interesting. I thought it was great. So I liked Brain here is a boxer all roughed up, but stubborn enough not to call it quits. He goes on the beer to keep those gloves up. That's interesting and deep, I think. Your brain is a boxer. It's kind of beat up, but you have to be able to, you know, but to drink to kind of keep things going. And I think we've all been there before, so that's kind of interesting. So Braves might be a bottle drink to death and then to living. And then, yes, the one thing is certain, the dog barks when the Ubers knock and the poems die. So, yeah, when real life kind of comes in to where you were, right, then you have to kind of, you know, when life interrupts, then everything, you know, you have to stop kind of what you're doing. So I thought that was very interesting. Yeah, it's a great job.
Great comment.
All right, cool. I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, please, and I'll go find it. I think that's it for the open poetry. Am I correct? You see any?
No, we have one more. Weaver of Dreams.
Oh, Weaver's is open? Okay, I will get Weaver's right here. I thought that was for the... I think Weaver's is for the... all right, yeah, we can play Weaver's. I think Weaver's actually for the contest, but she does have a SoundCloud, so we have to make sure we get that on.
Oh, she might have written for the contest, I guess.
Yeah, she wrote for the contest, but didn't put it in the contest. She was late, but that's okay. We'll still play Weaver's now. I think that's a great idea. So let's post it here, and there's a SoundCloud if we can play that, and it is posted.
Yeah. But on the last right, Silent Tree says, raw and viscerally powerful right with great imagery and a great read. Excellent right, Nuno. And Bill says, the opening is really captivating. So thank you for sharing, Nuno. Much appreciated. Okay, so I'll post Weaver's poem then.
I think I posted it, but that's okay, yeah. And I think it's got a SoundCloud. I'm sorry if it didn't show up.
Yeah, I didn't. So I posted it, but that's okay. And I'll go to the SoundCloud here. All right, here we go.
I asked among the fae folk, well-known purveyors of fear. No one knew how or why this castle could simply appear. It looked stolid and secure, with an aura of all keep out. Should we breach the walls, lest there be panic throughout? The question now was, do we employ raw strength or stealth? The Fae were interested only in what was best for their health. We were to have a morning meeting to air what we feared, but lo and behold, by sunrise, the mystery had disappeared. You might think that was the best outcome there could be, but now we have a myth built upon a story of a mystery. Would it return, had that first visit been merely accidental? We still know nothing, so now it feels completely transcendental.
Well, beautiful SoundCloud, Weaver. I really missed you tonight. I would have loved to have you on the show. But that said, I really enjoyed it, you know. I asked among the folk, well-known purveyors of fear, no one knew how or why this castle would simply appear. I like the way that she makes it just appear out of the, you know, like it looks like it just appears into the mist and in the treetops, which is a beautiful thing. And, you know, the mystery that surrounds that. We were to have a morning meeting to air what we feared, but lo and behold, by sunrise, the mystery had disappeared. A fantastic and powerful write on the subject of this mysterious castle that just floats in the sky, which is a wonderful thought. Great job, Weaver. Thank you so much for sharing. And Daniel, what are your thoughts?
I agree with that. I really love that imagination. She has a great imagination. And you know, it's interesting because yes, the castle is also always a focal point, but I like that she focused on, and for those of you being able to look at the picture, focused on basically the clouds behind it. And when you think about it by the way of the poem, you can see that. You can see it almost coming out of the clouds because it's just a white background as it is, just clouds. Which, when we were there, my wife and I were in Wales, England, for 2 weeks, and the sun literally did not shine for 2 weeks. The last day we were in London, the sun came out, and it was like a revelation. I didn't realize the sun wasn't out for that long until it actually came out, and it was so bright. So it was always like that. But the picture does look kind of like it could have just came out of the clouds, like you said, which is great. And you might think that it was the best outcome that could be, although now we had a myth to build upon a story of a mystery. So isn't that great when you kind of do see these things? You know, you can picture driving along and seeing kind of this castle there, and all of a sudden your mind starts thinking of all these mysteries and these myths and these fantasies that can happen. So beautiful as always, Reaver. I thought this is a really great take on the picture, and I enjoyed it immensely. Okay. Absolutely. Thank you. And we're going to crank along here. Salute said, a great piece. The second stanza pulled me into, but the rhythm and the rhyme, wonderful throughout. Bill Borden, I like the fantasy about the right by Reaver. The castle appears from nowhere. It's that ominous setting. So thank you, Bill. And I'm going to post on. It's your turn now. This is a brevity by Haken called, simply called Castle.
Okay.
I just posted it for you.
Castle by Haken 7. Castle behind the hill hangs in our minds, behind the foggy clouds, out of sight. The so-called lie, scared of sneak, hidden behind sneaky cloud, the friendly-looking, treacherous time. Life like a fairy tale. When you see there is one, there is not one. It crosses your mind. And boom.
Awesome read, great little brevity there. The so-called lie, scared or snake, hidden behind the sneaky cloud, friendly-looking, treacherous time. Life like a fairy tale. When you say there's one, there's not, it crosses your mind. I think that this is really interesting. So the first stanza is just describing the castle, but then all of a sudden his mind is going in all these directions. And whenever I see fantasy pictures like this, that's always what I think of. I can't help but just kind of imagine so many things, either what happened there or how there could be some sort of a story. And, I remember being in Wales, and it really was, to me, like being in a fairy tale. You know, growing here in Boston all the time, I'm just in the suburbs, it's kind of regular life. And then when you're in places like that, that are just fairy tale-like and just seem like you're in a book. You really get that type of feel. So great little brevity, Haken. I enjoyed this one. And for those of you as well too, there's an English. We posted the English, but this was written originally in Turkish. So anybody that can read Turkish should try to read the Turkish translation. I'm sure it's probably better. I'm sure if it was originally in Turkish, it's probably very interesting and beautiful to read in that. And what do you think, Gray?
I like the poem. You know, it kind of has that mysterious ilk to it, you know, that, like, Weaver had this castle that appears. And is it really there? You know, one has to wonder whether they're seeing what they're seeing or not. And I thought it was just brilliant, right? And Silent Tree says, great piece of brevity. I enjoyed the metaphors and imagery.
Cool. All right. And if you enjoyed that, Silent Tree, we got another one coming up here for you by Rangarath. I will read that. I just posted it. Just give me 1 second here, and I will read it. All right, this is called Resonating History. Every boulder on the castle will resonate history. The clang of swords, sparks from the fence flashed. Sneezing horses, cavalry, dodlers in bright uniforms, galloping stallions hoofing on granite floors, officers commanding the company, garrison of soldiers, citadel with bastion on it, soldiers guarding and watching, cannons pointed to the strategic points, a deep channel around the fortress infested with crocodiles, removable bridge on it. Many rulers came, conquered the city. Ruled from the blockhouse treasury of wealth, one day kings and queens vanished. Yet the grand old man remains chewing memories. History lies here in the heart of granite blocks. And poem.
Great read, Daniel. And I liked it. You know, it really captures the, it personifies the castle. You know, it captures the fact that the castle has lived through all these things. Every boulder on the castle resonates history. You know, it speaks to the castle having a heart and a soul. And I really enjoyed cavalry soldiers in the bright uniforms, galloping stallions, hooping on granite floors, officers commanding the company, garrison of soldiers. I mean, you know, all castles had that air of war in them, and I thought it was a brilliant write on that whole subject of what a castle lived through, and the fact that it does have history, which is ingrained in each boulder that is there. So great, great Rangaroth, and you read it. Daniel, what did you think?
I agree with you on that. I want to go back a little bit to the one beforehand where Bill Borden says from the translation of the Turkish, it really makes you wonder what's lost in translation. And I always think of that. I've been, I love philosophy, and I've been kind of reading the Quran lately only because I went to our Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, and they had some old Quran back from like the 600s or 700s. And I always wonder, like, geez, what exactly is that saying? You can have an English translation of things, but it's still not the exact, you know, way that it means. And that always makes me wish I could read more languages. Anyway, this one here, creating history is resonating. History is great, and that's Rangaroth. If you're listening, exactly what I think of when I think of anything like this is just I've been obsessed with history for like 10 years now, just thinking about it. And, you know, every boulder on the castle resonates history, and it's really true. You know, there's so much to that. I mean, you don't know what happened, what is banged into that boulder, what where that boulder came from to be made, who actually put it there. The clang of swords, sparks from the fence slashed. I love sneezing horses. That made me laugh. I don't know why. It's just interesting to kind of put that in there. Many rulers came, conquered the city, ruled from the blockhouse treasury of wealth. One day, kings and queens vanished. Yet here it still is, right? History lies in the heart of the granite blocks. And again, it's really true. You know, that's, you look at these old castles or old places, what's really there is history. And so much of it probably just lost. So amazing. I thought that was really, really interesting and beautiful as always from Rangaroth. Alrighty. Let's do we have another caller?
I'd like to welcome Louie Wildup to the show. Hello, Louie.
Hi, Daniel. Hi, Craig. Lulu's calling.
Hey, guys, my phone is dying. I have to hang up, and I'm going to call right back on another phone, so you'll hear me call back again. But I posted the next one anyway, so I don't know if you wanted to comment, Liu, if you heard that one, and then you can also read one if you did or if not. So go ahead. Go for
okay.
it.
Okay. You know, what I really enjoyed about his poem is, I've been to the castle of Neuschwanstein in the Heidelberg Castle. And I've walked and touched the walls where Hitler, you know, there's gun holes in the walls, and I could hear the marching. I could, you know, hear the agony of, you know, the buildings falling, and I could touch the holes. And, you know, when you read about history, it's one thing. When you walk in the halls of kings and queens, you hear the horse, you know, because they drove us up in horses and wagons. And, you know, I lived in an old city in Neum, and, you know, Augsburg by Munich. And, you know, when you touch those things, it's like you get infused with everything that you read and heard. There's just this hunger that I don't know that poets have, like Silent Tree with her Western. Oh my God, she's a fabulous writer. And you know, and I live in that area with a Billy the Kid, the Buffalo Soldiers, and you know, to touch history, to see history just infuses our minds with paintbrush of words. And this is why I love poetry.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Louie. Are you able to read, Louie?
I will try my best. And if I make any mistakes, I apologize in advance.
Okay, and welcome back, Daniel.
Hey.
Hi, Daniel. Castle Construction by Swimmer of Seas. What do you see? Said Merlin to his charge. I see a knight returning and the body politic at large. Ah, said the wizard, a common oversight. It's the castle that's the wanderer searching for the knight. Every fortress has its king, its portcullis and its keep. But what you sow in battle informs the life you reap. Every day can be a wall. Every deed is mortar true. Your spine a door of oak in halls that make it you. The quest is for your character in the iron and in the stone. The search will last forever. The quest is yours alone. End poem.
Wow, beautiful read, Lou. Very animated and engaged. So excellent write. I mean, excellent read on the right. And I like the right. You know, it makes the castle, the wanderer searching for the knight. Every fortress has its king, its portcullis. Portcullis keep it in the keep. But what you saw in battle informs the life you reap. I enjoyed that, you know, the fact that you are the castle searching for your inner spirit. And I thought it was great. You know, the personification of the castle is just wonderful. What are your thoughts, Daniel?
Yeah, I was thinking about the personification. I think that was a great comment, Gray. But I was also thinking about it almost a little bit more literally, or I guess I could say scientifically, of that, you know, the castle, like I'm picturing almost magical, like a castle is looking for them. Like the castle is nothing without the knight, right? Without that, it's just a bunch of bricks or whatever, but it's the castle that really, the knight doesn't necessarily need the castle. The castle needs the knight and the people to live there to be something. Every fortress has its king. Every day can be a wall. Every deed is mortar true. The quest is for your character and the iron and the stone. So really, really interesting that the way he did it. And it's got a kind of an old-timey, like ancient feel to it. I haven't really read Swimmer of Seas before, but he wrote for both of my contests, and I really like it. I'm hoping he writes a lot more. But excellent, and yeah, very great read as well. I'm glad you joined. Cool. And, all right, so, Louie, what are your thoughts from reading it?
You know, I'm a nerd, picking up my nerd glasses. You know what? I love Merlin. You know, Merlin was there not only to protect, but he was there to teach what was needed of, you know, the king, what was needed of those that were surrounded him around the round table. It was to infuse knowledge, because what you thought was important wasn't important. It was you and protecting the people. Everything else was to be put aside. And that's what I love, because I could hear Merlin in this. I could see what he was saying. And this just is an enchantment. Enjoyable.
Great comment. Thank you. And in the group, Bill Borden says, love the second stanza, the castle searches for the night. What a great metaphor. And then Silent Tree says, wow, loved his fantasy cake on the prompt. Great imagery, beautiful read, Liu, and wonderfully creative, right, Swimmer of Seas. So great comments on the board.
All right, cool. And we are going to be happy because we have a SoundCloud by Pam that I just posted. And for that next, that would be great.
Okay, here we go.
Evergreen and sienna slipping. A sky the color of ghostly whispers hangs like a condemned prisoner above the formality of silence. Withering trees are hanging on, stubborn roots gripping craggy earth of a hillside. In the past, the hill has known cavalry charges of bugles and swords and other common sounds of conquest. Nature is cryptic at times, too many shades of brown and green to keep track, and we watch as evergreen and sienna slip through quaking portals of desperate fingers. The observations of stone are a continuing process that writes the poetry of water and wind. Mankind's vanity is a history of begrudged steps taken, crimson and copper spilled in the name of purpose. Love and death comes often at unreasonable times, or so we think. Unreasonable thoughts hanging like wisteria upon the structure of a castle crumbling into the hysteria of red soil. End poem.
Wow, what a beautiful SoundCloud Pam has given us here. And I really enjoyed it. You know, I really enjoyed evergreen and sienna slipping through quaking portals of desperate fingers. I mean, you can picture life fading as somebody's reaching out, trying to hold on to life and the sky and the forest around them is slipping. And I thought it was just a powerful, right? You know, she really said so much in so few words, especially that last stanza where she says, unreasonable thoughts hanging like wisteria upon the structure of a castle crumbling into the hysteria of red soil. Wow, powerful, powerful poem, Pam. Thank you so much for sharing. What did you think, Daniel?
I always love Pam's poems and her sound calls. I'm happy when she gives them. And I agree with you 100% on that. It was very interesting. And mankind's vanity is a history of begrudged steps taken. What an amazing line that is. And personally, I really like the withering trees are hanging on, stubborn roots gripping craggy earth. Hillside. Where is it here? There it is. Observations of stone are a continued process, writes the poetry of water and wind. This it's hard to see in the picture, obviously, but in front of the castle, so to the left of the picture, is the actual ocean. And I guess the guy was telling me that the ocean, you know, at that time was right up there, so it was right at the bottom of that hill, kind of just below that pine tree that's there. So this castle was right on the ocean and was probably defending itself a lot from ships coming
mm-hmm.
in. And I could kind of picture that
mm-hmm.
when the guy that was running the castle was telling us. So that I could picture that when he was saying it. It's really interesting that she got that out of it. But you know, and then I just again like that mankind's vanity of the history of the good and steps. You know, it can actually be. I know it's. Building castles was to protect themselves, but there also be this vanity there too of you know owning a castle and having other people living kind of below you. But really interesting and beautiful as always from Pam.
Absolutely, great comment, Daniel. Thank you. And Louie, what did you think?
You know, I loved Pam's imagery and wording because it's so visual and. We can feel it, you know, like with her first stanza. When I walk the steps of my ancestors. When I touch a castle wall, it's like I get it infused in history. It's like the energies of the past infuse me. And I thought she got that. Oh, my gosh. So beautifully. Is sky the color of ghostly whispers? I hear my ancestors. I hear the past. You know, for some reason, I just do. Everything, it's like, you know, being drawn into the past and seeing into the past. And I thought that she caught that wonderful in her second stanza. And we know as time goes by, nature always takes over. She shifts the way she wants to shift. And where she said, the observation of stone, you know, it's not just stone, it's to touch it. You know, are a continuing process that writes the poetry of water and wind. Mankind's sanity is a history of begrudged steps taken because she will always take back over. Crimson and copper spilled in the name of purpose. Where we go and we see, as like in this picture, or like in the picture that Daniel put up, nature will make her own path.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely great comment. And in the group, Silent Trees says, a beautiful piece full of emotive imagery and wonderfully layered metaphors. Amazing read and fabulous write, Pam. And then Bill Borden says, great write, Pam. Love the line, observation of stone, or a continuing process that writes the poetry of water and wind to see what the stone has seen to relive that history. Yeah, great comment. All right, Daniel, what do we have next?
All right, we got 10 more minutes, so we should be able to at least get one, if not two more in, so let's see how we do. I just posted one by Yorkie Buff called Abandonment, and I'm going to give that one a read. The sky is bleached of color, chalk shades cold and bleak, misting up over ramparts, castle walls, and still sepia. Shading into cloud vapor, eyes damp against blitz where arrows fly. The hill rises stepped with, boulders strewn carelessly, trees clawing above ground, Tudor black and white beams lost in overgrown gardens of creeping, straggled branches, casting long shadows. Neglect climbs up the slope, slipping, sliding on dry shale, inexorable in its slow ascent. Moss growing in overhangs, struggling to survive neglect. Battles won over worn stones, crumbling to dust. Tower eerie, shrouded bank, blank. Echo with soldiers' war cries, ghosts forever lost wandering, far from home, clutch at linen. Gathered round ivory rib bones, sucking long teeth, chattering, wandering battlements alone. End poem.
Well, great read, Daniel. And I like that poem. I mean, you know, it really captures the essence of the history and the ghosts that haunt the castle as it exists. You know, tower eyrie shrouded blank, echo of soldiers' war cries, ghosts forever lost, wandering far from home, clutch at linen gathered round ivory rib bones, fucking long teeth, chattering, wandering battlements alone. I mean, you can picture all that as you read through it. So just a wonderful write, Yorkie Bluff, and fantastic read, Daniel. Lee, what are your thoughts?
You know, I really liked your comment, Gray. You know, you can hear their cries, you know. I was watching a special about Native Americans, and, you know, I could just see the blood of the soldiers, and I could see the blood of the Native Americans and hear their cries and fighting. And, you know, it's something that is in us with our ancestors where we can hear this. You know, I could see the soldiers just fighting and the arrows flying, you know, and then I could also see time passing by and, you know, now the danger isn't another country. It's the moss and the wear and tear that you may, you know, slip and break your leg or your neck. You know, Mother Nature punishing you for you know, run up her ground. But I really love that last stanza. Tower Aries shattered blank echoes with soldier cries, ghosts forever lost wandering from where home clutch at linen gathered round ivory rib bones, sucking long teeth, chattering, wandering, battlements alone. And this is so well written that this will, whoever is seeing, like you were talking about earlier, you get pulled back into the past and we relive it.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lee. And Daniel, what are your thoughts?
I agree with both of you, and I think we all jumped on that last stanza, which is really beautiful, the ghost forever lost wandering. I really liked, so Weaver, I think, kind of focused on the back, I think it was Weaver that did it, the focus on the back door of the world, but the clouds coming in, coming out of the clouds, and I think this poem here for Yoki Blood is focusing almost on the trees in the foreground, so not the castle again, but showing the trees, kind of taking it over, so taking this castle as, you know, something that is now being taken over by nature again, and being and how it's kind of almost the castle itself is personified, is struggling to kind of live, and at the end, it's a ghost, kind of, you know, the ghosts in there are lost wandering. The cat, even though the castle's rock, it's still struggling. I forget what I was reading somewhere. I was reading somewhere that, you know, if humans disappeared right now, like what would be left, and the stone structures, you know, like 10,000 years from now, there would be very little left over. There'd be some stone statues and so forth, but even things like this would just be eaten up and gone after 10,000 years, something like that. And so that's what I was kind of picturing. Is really interesting. All right, so we have 4 minutes left. Do you think we can squeeze in? I have a short one here. Do you think we can do that?
Okay.
I think we could try. So if you want to give this a read, Gray, and this is by Nashif. I just posted it for you.
Okay, this is called When Did My Dreams Change by Nashif. Standing tall, winning wars, here I stand with one thing I can be proud of. So why now? Seeing those trees fall, I fear something I might have been missing all along. They all hailed, the invincible castle saves the day. Yet again, everything perished and somehow remains the same. I look back, digging memories under the forest, standing tall, watching the seasons change. End poem.
Mm-hmm. Awesome read, and a great metaphor I think he has here for you know, castles being your dreams and your something that you're holding on to, right? It's your castle, you've made it, but you know, seeing the trees fall and all and so forth, you know, he might have missed something. So, you know, the castle might save the day, but everything around you might be crumbling. So really interesting and a great little brevity, Nashif. I really appreciate you calling in. Will you? If you have some quick thoughts on this, that would be great.
Yeah. You know, for me, what I got out of this was somebody that wakes up and then all of a sudden realizes, like, where am I? I'm in the wrong time. You feel as if you're in the wrong time. And, you know, to wake up and realize you're moving either forward or backwards, which he doesn't really specify. But he wakes up to a time where everything he has known is gone. And I can't imagine how lost, because if you look at that last stanza, I look back, digging memories under the forest, still standing tall, watching the seasons change. Everything has changed for him, and he's trying to dig for the past, which he cannot attain.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lydia. All right. I thought it was a wonderful read as well. You know, I like the dream, and you had so much to say in so few words, so great job, Nashif, and thank you for sharing. All right, well, thank you to you and Daniel for calling in and sharing your heart, your mind, your voices, and most especially your time. Thank you so much, Aspasia, for calling, Aspasiana, for calling in, and great show tonight. Thank you. Thank you for co-hosting,
yeah,
Daniel.
Of course, thanks, Gray. Nice job. We will see you in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. And I'd like to thank Bill Borden, Silent Tree, and Hope for hanging out on the board and tuning in. Great job. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Good night, everybody. Good night. Love you guys.
Much love.
Much love. Good night, everybody. Love you guys. Good night, Daniel. Good night, Gray.
Good. Good night, guys.
And Bill and Silent Tree. Good night.